It's better over here.
After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
For the past 3 seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a 4th season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's the Amazing Rico Bronya Podcast with your host, Evan Roberts.
Is the freaking World Series over yet? Hi. Welcome to Rico Bronya. Evan Roberts, we get set for the offseason, which will not really, really begin until this World Series between the New York Yankees and the Los Angeles Dodgers is over. But when this offseason begins, there are different steps. And step number one, the one we will be tackling today, is addressing our very own free agents. Obviously, this is an offseason with very high expectations. There are some superstar players that are available, and we will certainly spend a lot of time kind of jumping into which stars we want to go after, how many years and how much money you'd be willing to give them, how they fit this team. But the Mets have a lot of free agents. So on today's edition of the Rico Bronya, we will go through all of the Met free agents, decide, do we want them back? B, do they fit on this team? And then C, what are they going to get paid? Because that's a big factor here. You know, how many years are these guys going to get? How much money are they going to get? And look, a lot of that is guessing and kind of looking back at the last couple of years at comparable free agents, looking at the market and saying, okay, if so-and-so got this, then that means this guy's going to get that. So there's a lot of components in deciding which free agents you want back. Obviously, some of the guys we're going to talk about today, we have developed emotional attachments to. And that's very tough. You know, this is not black and white. I don't think this is as simple as just taking emotion and throwing it aside. You know, obviously, more than anything, you got to factor in the player and how much that player can help the team in 2025 and beyond. But obviously, this was a season in which some of the guys we talked about made really strong impacts on our emotions. So we will go through the 12. That's right, 12 key free agents that the New York Mets have going into this offseason. They may add more to this list. Remember, there are guys they may non-tender that can become free agents that could certainly come back on cheaper deals. We had mentioned Paul Blackburn as a possibility. But the guys who are free agents in no particular order include 3 starting pitchers, 4 relievers, and 5 position players. They are Jose Quintana, Luis Severino, Sean Manaea, Adam Ottavino, Brooks Raley, Drew Smith, Ryan Stanek, Pete Alonso, Harrison Bader, J.D. Martinez, Jose Iglesias, and Jesse Winker. This does not include team options that are like 50-50. Like, for example, Phil Maton, the Mets have a team option on. I'm going to leave him aside. That'll kind of be a different discussion. These are the guys that, you know, at a 99% clip are going to be free agents. Sean Manaea has a player option, but considering the year he just had, I don't think there's any doubt he's going to be a free agent. Now, before we get started, Pete Hoffman, I asked him, I said, Pete, can you put together your ranking system? So let's attack Hoff's ranking system on these 12 free agents. I will give you my opinion on these free agents, and then we'll also delve into what we think they're going to get in the open market. So Pete's list features 5 tiers. We've got the priority tier. We've got tier 2, tier 3, tier 4, and then tier 5, in which he labeled it, lock the door once they've left the building, which I appreciate. Let's start at the bottom. Adam Ottavino is a free agent, and Pete, and I think a lot of Met fans are on the side of lock the door, get them out, see you later. Drew Smith is on that tier. Lock the door, get him out, see you later. Drew Smith may also may not be able to pitch much in 2025, but I understand being completely over him. The other guy in that tier, according to Pete Hoffman, is J.D. Martinez, unless J.D. Martinez wants to coach, which is a nice caveat. Tier number four, these are the guys that I guess you could bring back, but not really, according to Hoff. Harrison Bader, which I'm very surprised he got to that conclusion, considering he's a big Harrison Bader guy, and Jose Quintana. Tier three, Brooks Raley, Ryan Stanek, and Luis Severino. Tier two, Jose Iglesias and Jesse Winker. And his priorities are Pete Alonso and Sean Manaea. Obviously, Pete Alonso is one of the guys that we will spend a lot of time talking about. We've already spent a lot of time talking about Pete Alonso and the pluses and the minuses of bringing Pete back. So I want to start off with an email, a very well thought out email by Ray Pierce, who wrote about the pros and the cons of Pete Alonso. And then we will attack how important it is to bring him back. Ray writes, "My views on the polar bear. Did you know that polar bears are mainly blubber, being 4 inches thick? Todd Frazier was actually insulting Mr. Alonso." Pros, defense. I've seen a lot of bad first basemen since 1962 and some very good ones like Mr. Rico Bronya. The greatest first baseman in MLB that I ever saw as a young person that no one had ever heard of was Bill White. Footwork. Pete Alonso has excellent footwork. This is salient as on occasion Lindor throws sidearm and the baseballs drift well off the bag. Scooping. Alonso is one of the best first basemen at scooping balls in the dirt. The most important aspect of any first baseman is the ability to scoop throws in the dirt. Lindor throws balls in the dirt often. Vientos throws bullets are high and true, being chest high. Whomever is playing second base normally mails a good throw as it is a short distance with time. Range. Alonso has great range to his right. He's very good at moving for a big-bodied man. Throws. Pete Alonso is the worst-throwing first baseman in Major League Baseball. His throws behind the pitcher will cause injury as the pitcher running to the bag has to contort himself in his body and stretch for the ball. He throws where he leads the pitcher through the bag. The other extreme will also injure a pitcher as the pitcher will be run over by the runner or injure his arm. His throws to second base are terrible." By the way, I think that... I think that Ray's assessment is actually pretty accurate. Like, Pete Alonso is very good at scooping balls in the dirt. He's very good at going to his right. His throws, whether it's the spring training play with pitchers covering or throws to second base, are probably bottom five in the league. That's the funny part. Like, overall, I think Pete Alonso's okay defensively, and I think he's gotten better year to year. But if you take apart his defense, like certain aspects of it, there are certain aspects, like you talked about, where I'd say he's average or above average, but the throwing part of it is really bad. And here's what's interesting about Pete. In college, and I think in high school too, he actually played a lot of third base. So he had to have some semblance of an arm, but I guess he wasn't very accurate. Ray writes, "Overall defense. The salient reason for the Mets to sign Alonso is because of his defense. Do not move Mark Vientos. The best defensive third baseman the Mets have had so far is another person youngsters don't know. His name was Charlie Smith. But no Met has had the arm and the accuracy of Mark Vientos. I actually heard on your pod, Evan, a suggestion of having Brett Beatty play third or be a DH. Beatty cannot hit any slow inside pitch in the dirt he swings at. This proves that being able to score a baseball game and understanding what you're watching are two very different things." Well, first of all, Brett Beatty has to prove he can hit at the major league level. He hasn't done that yet. Like, you're making the declaration he can never hit at the major league level. I don't know that for sure. Now, am I willing to give him an everyday job? No. I think Brett Beatty is going to have to kind of force his way in the way Mark Vientos did. Under no circumstances would I go into spring training of 2025 with Beatty being handed anything offensively. He's got a lot to prove. He's had a lot of major league at-bats, and he hasn't proven it. Offensively, the greatest power hitters in Mets history ever were Frank Thomas and Dave Kingman. Dave Kingman came up as a third baseman with the Giants, played first base and corner outfield. When Alonso played for Florida, I remember him pulling a ball into the left field bullpen for a long home run. He has foolish pride of being a dead pull hitter because of his mindset. He's a poor hitter overall and does not understand hitting 101. In order to get pitches to pull, the batter must prove he can hit the ball to the opposite field. Alonso has pitched over and over the same way. Hard stuff inside, high stuff high, and then off-speed pitches in the dirt and off the plate. Pete Alonso gets himself out much like Alvarez, albeit he has spurts where he goes to right field. I don't think that's really fair. Pete has great power to the opposite field. Like, yes, sometimes he gets pull happy. I think a lot of hitters do that, where they try to track every ball 450 feet. But I think, as he showed you in that big home run against Milwaukee, he can go oppo when needed. The main problem I have in signing Alonso as an offensive player is, will he accept a role not as the center of attention? Since his days at Florida, Alonso has always desired to be the center of everything. He has a very large ego. Can he accept the role of a complimentary player? I think he'll have a very hard time doing that. Even when someone else hits a game-winning hit, he is the first to try to tear off their shirt, which will separate his shoulder. Ray, I love you, and I appreciate the well-thought-out email, but Pete Alonso needing to be the center of attention, to me, is ridiculous. Pete Alonso wants to get paid. And look, the Mets are a high payroll team, so they could pay him $25 million a year. That doesn't mean he's the center of attention. It doesn't mean he needs to be the preeminent slugger in a lineup. Like, obviously, a lot of that depends on everybody around you. And I think that's been the biggest mistake we've had in this Pete Alonso discourse. Like, there's this idea of, can you build a team around Pete Alonso? Why do you have to do that? I mean, why does that have to be how we're deciding if you bring Pete back or not? Can Pete Alonso help this team? Can he be a productive player over the next 3 or 4 years? Is he worth the money and years you're going to have to give him? But the idea of he has to be their best slugger, he's a core player. Well, if Mark Vientos is becoming a star, which he did this past season, and Francisco Alvarez can take another step, and dare I say they have enough money in the coffers to also sign Juan Soto, then Pete Alonso is a complimentary player. It's not based on, you know, what you tell him. It's based on just performing. And Pete Alonso is going to make the money that the open market dictates. Now, in my opinion, where I'm at with Pete coming off a year that was, you know, overall disappointing offensively, I think there are some concerns about, okay, how does he age now over the next couple of years? Was the struggle this season about Pete getting a little bit older, the wear and tear of playing 160 games every season? Or was this a year in which he just pressed? And I think it's a fair concern to build in. I kind of lean towards he pressed a little bit. I lean towards he may be one of those guys that once he gets his long-term contract, it actually relax and not relax in a bad way in which he falls apart. And one thing I love about Pete, which he proved this season again, even in an off year, is that he plays. And there's a value to playing. Like, ask yourself this. I remember we talked about Corey Seager in this context compared to Francisco Lindor. Would you rather have a guy that plays 120 games, puts up massive numbers, or a guy that plays 160 games, but doesn't put up the same massive numbers? You got to replace that guy for 40 games.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get 4 5G phones on us and 4 lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
So where I'm at with Pete Alonso is I would try to get him on a 4-year contract. I think 4 years is probably kind of the perfect number for him when you look at age and you look at risk factor. Pete Alonso is not 30 years old yet. He's going to turn 30 in December. So it's kind of easy when talking about his age because the whole season he is the same age. There's no birthday in the middle of June. So you're talking, if you can get him to a 4-year deal, 30, 31, 32, 33. I think that's incredibly reasonable. And honestly, And this is, I think, what you have to ask yourself about a contract like this. If he puts up similar production to what he put up this past season. Now, obviously, you hope that the production comes in a more clutch way, which is very tough to define. We've gone through that, where how many of his home runs were clutch, how many of his home runs were meaningless. But if overall you could put up a near 800 OPS, 854 for his career, but an 800 OPS, and you could hit 35 home runs, which is what he did this year, the lowest of his career in a full season. And you could hit 245, 250, right around his career batting average. Don't you think 4 years, let's say 25 per, so that's a four-year, $100 million deal. You don't think that's reasonable? You don't think that's a fair contract? Now, when you get above that, and if Pete is able to get above that and is able to demand a seven-year contract, I get it. I get the risks. Would I feel comfortable with Pete Alonso making that kind of money for the next 7 years? I think the debate you have is, well, it's Steve Cohen. There's no salary cap. There's just luxury tax thresholds, which the Mets are going to be over anyway. It's not my money. Screw it. And the problem with that, which sometimes I do feel, is then why would we ever talk about years and money on a player? Then it's just a bank that never goes away. Just sign everybody. But if we're trying to be fair about the player and trying to predict the future, I think 4 years is that perfect sweet spot. If Pete's going to be able to get more than that, then I think there's a really good chance he's not going to be on this team next year. But what you have to factor in, and this is the tough part about your own free agents, all right? We're starting with Pete, and we'll get to a lot of other guys. But one big factor is everybody else and the other free agents. If you sign Juan Soto, who should absolutely be a priority in free agency, I'd admit it takes the pressure off signing Pete Alonso. Maybe you go into the Pete negotiations and say, you know what? I'm not going any more than 3 years. I just locked in on 15 years with Juan Soto. I've already improved my lineup in a great way. I'd like to have Pete. Like, how great would that lineup be if I could have Lindor, Soto, Alonso, Vientos? I mean, that's an incredible core. Incredible. So I think a lot of this is, do you get Soto? But let's say you don't get Soto, which I still think is the likeliest scenario. And Pete's market is bigger than we want. And he ends up getting 7 years from the Astros or from Chicago. How do you replace him? I do agree with Ray. Brett Beatty is not a guy that I want to insert as the everyday third baseman. Are you willing to trust the youth, to trust Ronnie Mauricio, to trust Jet Williams, to trust Luis Angel Acuna that they can make an impact? That is a very tough leap of faith that you think you're going to replace, even come close to replacing 34 home runs, 88 RBIs, and an 800 OPS in a down season. So what makes things difficult with losing Pete, if 4 years, $100 million, is A, something the Mets aren't willing to go to, or B, Scott Boras is willing to get more than four, how do you replace that bat? And that's always been one of my arguments about Pete. How do you replace it? For anyone who draws that line in the sand of, I can't go more than that, he doesn't deserve that, I'm concerned about what he looks like at 32, do you want to sign Alex Bregman for more money? Do you want to try to get Christian Walker on a short-term deal? Look, I think that's the ideal replacement, if they lost Pete, is to get the older Walker on a short-term deal where you're not locking yourself up much long-term. But to me, it's a downgrade, despite the year that Christian Walker had. So Pete Alonso is one of my priorities, but I put him in the kind of the bag of, if I sign Soto, which should be priority number one because of his age and just how incredibly talented he is offensively, if I sign Soto, I would be more willing to say, you know what? I'm going to try the youth to replace the production of Pete, because I just added Soto to the outfield, which is a huge upgrade over Harrison Bader, Tyrone Taylor, or even Starling Marte, whomever that bat ultimately replaces. But as we sit here today, I do put Pete high on my priority list, and I think 4 years, $100 million feels like a nice sweet spot. Is he going to get more than that? I don't know. That's the tough part about this. I don't know. A year ago, I would have said yes. But I'm not sure at 30 years old, coming off of the year he came off of, what the market's going to be for Pete. But I think 4 years, 100 feels good. So he's on my top priority list, like Pete Hoffman said. But the caveat is Juan Soto. Now let's get to Sean Manaea, because I do think there are some similarities in that regard. I would like Sean Manaea back. I think that Manaea, especially in the second half, especially after the adjustments he made watching Chris Sale, especially being a lefty. Look, there's a thing about lefties developing late. We've seen a lot of guys do that throughout their career. I believe Sean Manaea can be very good and can be very productive for the next couple of years. But very similar to Pete, my priority is somebody else. And if I get that somebody else, I'd be more willing to say, you know what? Thank you, Sean. Go get paid elsewhere. I think you'll be productive, but I just got a top-line guy, and so I'm more willing to let you go. And that top-line guy to me is Corbin Burns. Is there risk with Corbin? Of course there is. There is risk with any starting pitcher you're going to give a long-term deal to, and Burns is going to get 7 years. He is. And I think you have to go in there knowing fully what the risks are. And the risks are he could get hurt. I mean, that's every starting pitcher. But I think my philosophy moving forward is I don't mind having one guy having a massive contract that I'm willing to bet on to stay healthy and be a top line arm. And I would be willing to make that bet with Corbin Burns. Am I willing to make that bet with Max Fried? Not really. Shane Bieber is obviously out after the injury he had. So of all of the guys, not just this year, but over the next couple of years, and I'm not going to include Roki Sasaki in this because there's so much unknown to him. And if he gets to free agency this year, the kid from Japan, it's a very different kind of free agency. It's not a highest bidder free agency. It's kind of like when Ohtani signed a few years earlier. So I don't know, despite how much scouting the Mets are doing on Sasaki, how much of a real chance they have in him. And I think the international player is very different based on their age and also based on the unknown. We don't know what they are. Look at Yoshinobu Yamamoto. We don't know. But Burns would be the one guy I'd be willing to bet on as an ace. Now, as far as Manaea is concerned, I think what's going to be really tricky, and I was looking at this the other day, I'll read some of these to you, the past free agents of starting pitchers to try to get a gauge on what Manaea is going to get. Can't compare him to Yamamoto. Can't compare him to Aaron Nola, who got to free agency at 31 years old, but also had proven to be so reliable before his free agency. Is Eduardo Rodriguez a fair comparison? I think it is. Lefty, 31 years old, has had some good seasons, kind of like Sean. Eduardo Rodriguez got 4 years, $80 million. And I think that's probably where Sean Manaea ends up. In that 3 to 4, I don't think he gets a fifth. Maybe there's an option on that fourth year, but that's the kind of deal you're looking at. Sonny Gray, who was 35 years old, 34 years old at free agency, got 3 years, $75 million. I think that could be very similar. And so the way I look at it is, if the Mets don't get Corbin Burns, for whatever reason, maybe he doesn't want to pitch here, maybe the price becomes too high, maybe David Stearns knows enough about Burns to where he's like, eh, I've got my bar. I'm not going higher than that. Then Manaea, much like I was talking about with Pete, becomes a real priority. And he'd be the one guy of Severino and Quintana I'd be willing to push just a little bit further on. But I can't go more than 4 years. In fact, I don't even want to go 4 years. I'd rather up the annual salary and try to get him on a 3-year contract. And that's the power that Steve has. You want to go 3 years, $90 million? It sounds kind of crazy, giving a guy $30 million a year. But you know what? The Mets showed this to you this year. Short-term deals. That's what you want to do. To me, that's what you want to do. Now, Manaea ended up getting 2 years, $28 million. There was an option on the second year. So essentially, it became a 1-year contract. I think he was good enough this year that he's not going to have to settle for a 1+1 kind of contract. That's why I think we are looking at 3 or 4. If it gets to 5, I got to tell you, I got to walk away from that. I can't give a 5-year deal to a guy who's in his mid-30s. I can't do it. 33 years old, if we're being accurate. So Manaea, very similar to Pete. Priority, if I don't get my number one target, Soto and Burns. My other priorities, and I think this is a little bit different and a little bit easier
because they're not going to cost as much money, and there isn't an outstanding free agent that's going to cause me to change my mind on this. And this may be emotional. I admit that. I'm prioritizing keeping Jose Iglesias. And I'm prioritizing keeping Jose Iglesias for three reasons. Let's get the OMG stuff out of the way. He clearly added something to this locker room. And while recreating that magic again probably feels unrealistic, he obviously deserves a lot of credit for a room that got destroyed a year ago to being called up and really being a part of the renaissance that we saw in the middle of the season. And that's like the fluffy, fun stuff. But the real stuff is that I think my priority on why I want him back. So the Mets have a lot of really young learning middle infielders that are going to end up all over the diamond. Luis Angel Acuna, who we saw this season. Jet Williams, who we will probably at some point see in 2025. Ronnie Mauricio, who Jose Iglesias has not gotten his hands on yet. He missed this entire season with the torn ACL. And I think that a veteran like Iglesias, a guy who was almost out of baseball, a guy who's been humbled as much as anybody, I think he is an outstanding teacher to have around young players like that. I also don't think he needs to play every day. And I think Jose Iglesias is going to know that. Despite having the kind of year he had where he hit .338, I don't think he's going to be guaranteed an everyday job elsewhere. And so Jose Iglesias as a teacher with a lot of good young position players serves a huge value. That's number two. Number three, he's a good baseball player. He's really good defensively, whether it's spelling Francisco Lindor at shortstop, as rare as that is. He looked brilliant defensively at second base. I hope there's a day, because I thought Vientos was growing at third base a lot, where you won't need him to be a late-inning defensive replacement for Vientos, but he's an option for that too. And I think Iglesias' perfect role is not to be the everyday second baseman, which he turned out to be until the final few games of the LCS. It's being a super utility guy. It's being a guy over the course of 162 games, whether there's an injury to Vientos or Lindor, or it's just he's producing, let him play for a couple of days. I think he's one of those guys that can get a lot of at-bats, not being a guaranteed everyday second baseman. I wouldn't pencil him in that way, but can serve a very valuable role. So I think having as many young middle infielders as they have, I've talked openly about trading Jeff McNeil. We'll talk more about that on a future Rico Bronya. I think there's a great value to bringing him back. I don't think the price tag is going to be high. And I think that you want to keep the guts of a locker room that was so strong as close together as possible. But don't take that as that's the reason. It's a part of the reason. There's a lot of little factors that get involved. But I also just think as a baseball player, he's very productive. I don't expect him to hit .338. I don't expect him to hit .450 with runners in scoring position with two outs. But I think he can help this team, and I would bring him back. And so I have him on my priority list. Let's move down just a little bit of a tad to the I'd like them back, maybe not as high of a priority as those top three guys. We get to Jesse Winker. I think in an ideal world, and look, the outfield is such a fluctuating thing with the Mets, because right now I look at the Met outfield. I see one guarantee. It's all I see. I see Brandon Nimmo as maybe back in center field, probably still in left field. I think Starling Marte is a guy that could very well be traded with only one more year left on his deal. I'm not saying you have to trade him. I'm saying I'm open to trading. You know, I'm open to listening if a team would take on a portion of his contract. Harrison Bader is a free agent. He is a fourth outfielder at best. Tyrone Taylor is here, and to me, he's a fourth outfielder. So what is the Met outfield? Is Drew Gilbert ready to step in right away and be an everyday center fielder? Unfortunately, I think Gilbert is in a very similar spot to where he was last year, where I think barring a huge spring training and depending on how this team builds the outfield, I think Gilbert starts in AAA and he's got to prove himself. And you want to give yourself an avenue to where he can take over as an everyday center fielder. Same thing with Jet Williams, because he could be an outfielder too. Same thing with Luis Angel Acuna. Like, you want to have one outfield spot that can potentially become one of your young players, but you can't rely on that right from jump. So where does this leave Jesse Winker? It leaves Jesse Winker as a part-time player, as a guy who may well DH as a guy who may well get some at-bats in right field. And I think there's a great value to Winker being that guy. And I think Jesse Winker fits in terms of he'll play a lot, but once a young player is ready to step up and take an everyday job, Jesse Winker is a fine fourth outfielder and fine left-handed bat off the bench. And that's how you have to view him. Juan Soto dictates a lot of Met free agency. And by the way, I feel very good talking about Juan Soto because I really have gone out of my way to not talk about him as a free agent on the fan. Yeah, I think it's ridiculous. The Yankees are in the World Series. You know, to the Yankee fan, talking about Soto's free agency to me is nuts. So here is a nice free place. Our offseason's begun. We could talk about whomever. But I think Soto dictates a lot because let's say the Mets did sign him. Let's say the Mets blow him away. I would look at the outfield much more conservatively. I would look more at, all right, you want to start the year with Tyrone Taylor playing a lot of center field? You want to start the year with Jesse Winker playing a lot of left field and Brandon Nimmo in center and keep that center field job way open for a Drew Gilbert? I'd be much more conservative. If you don't sign Soto, I actually think it becomes more complicated because, okay, you still need to sign an outfielder. Unless you believe Starling Marte is playing 150 games. And I'll tell you how I view Marte if I don't trade him. I'm open to trading him. But the thing about trading players is I got to get something back. I'm not just giving him away. I see Marte as a DH in 2025. J.D. Martinez, who Pete Hoffman put on the lock the door once they've left the building tier, and I'm close to Pete on that, should not be back unless he's really willing to accept, you know, platoon right-handed bat off the bench. I think Starling Marte at DH more often than not makes a lot of sense. So Winker is important. He's replaceable, but I think we all loved his energy, his fire, and his clutchness. And also, Jesse Winker not being on another team means he can't kill the Mets. I would love to bring Brooks Raley back. I think Raley has to come back on a short-term deal. The Mets really missed having a left-handed reliever out of that bullpen. I think that's one of their offseason targets that they have to address, adding a lefty reliever. Raley was good when he pitched. So I think a lot of this is about medicals. A lot of this is about, do you have faith that he can be healthy? But of all the relievers that are free agents, I would actually prioritize him a hell of a lot more than a guy like Ryan Stanek. I know Stanek pitched well in the playoffs, not opposed to bringing him back on a short-term deal. I also want to see this team sign at least one, sure thing may not be the right phrase, but guy I'd feel really good about out of my bullpen. You know, whether it is Tanner Scott, whether it is Clay Holmes, a guy you can bring in, not be your closer, but feel pretty good about pairing that guy up with Edwin Diaz at the end of games. Mention Ryan Stanek. I'm good with bringing him back. He's kind of in the middle of this list on the right deal, sure, but I also think he's very replaceable. Luis Severino. So I would like to bring Sevy back, but again, it's got to be a short-term deal. I think the Mets got it so right this past offseason when they signed these sort of reclamation projects. The problem is when a guy has a solid year like Sevy, he's going to want a long-term deal. Right now, the Mets have two guys in their rotation that I would say are sure things to be in the rotation, David Peterson and Kodai Senga. I would like, whether it's of guys like Quintana, Severino, Manaea, or adding veteran free agents, I'd probably want two guys to add, and then I'd feel okay with my fifth and sixth spot being guys that are already here. A guy like Jose Budo, one of the younger guys potentially stepping up and taking a rotation spot. So Severino to me is a lot based on years. I wouldn't go more than 2 or 3 years. I wouldn't. He was very solid this year. He pitched to his career ERA. I would love him back on a 2 or 3 year deal. Jose Quintana, I actually feel more kind of solid about Quintana than Severino. I think Quintana has shown you with his track record, even though he had a very up and down year this year, despite his numbers finally getting to a solid place. I think Quintana fits kind of like that back end tier. So Senga, Peterson, locks for the rotation. I would want one big-time arm. Corbin Burns would be my priority. And then I do think there's a big drop-off after that. Max Fried makes me kind of nervous. I like Walker Buehler more as a reclamation project than anything else, though I don't get the vibe that Buehler's coming to New York on a one-year deal. I don't get that. I think if Buehler is accepting a short-term deal, he's probably staying in L.A. or he's going to a small town. He's from Lexington, Kentucky. I've spent some time in Lexington, Kentucky. I don't think he wants to come to New York on a one-year deal. But I would want one kind of top-ish end starting pitcher and then someone else that's solid that can eat up innings, and Jose Quintana clearly does that. So Quintana and Severino, I'm open to bringing back, but I'd kind of want them back on very similar contracts to what they just had, which is short-term deals. And a lot of that is going to be letting the market dictate it. And finally, I am with Pete Hoffman. Adam Ottavino and Drew Smith and even J.D. Martinez, as I mentioned, thank you for your service. We will see you later. It's going to be very interesting, though. 12 free agents. So if I had to power rank them, I'd put Alonso and Manaea kind of in that top spot. Pete Alonso, number one. But other free agents, Soto and Burns, really dictating my aggressiveness on bringing them back. Then I would go Jose Iglesias, Jesse Winker, Brooks Raley. Then I would go Quintana and Severino, followed by Stanek. And then, oh, I never mentioned Harrison Bader. Harrison Bader, look, I said this since the moment they signed him. He's a fourth outfielder. And I think with Tyrone Taylor, they already have him, basically. They have a better offensive version of Bader, not quite as good defensively in center field. So I think Bader and Taylor, to a degree, are sort of redundant. And so for that reason, thank you, Harrison Bader, for your time. But I'd probably move on. I'm not 1,000% against him. Because, again, you want to leave that center field spot sort of open for the possibility of Drew Gilbert or Jet Williams or Luis Angel Acuna taking it. So I wouldn't put him in the Ottavino, Drew Smith, J.D. Martinez category, but I don't think Harrison Bader is necessary on this team. Your thoughts? Who are your priorities to bring back in free agency? You could email us at thericob@gmail.com, thericob@gmail.com. Coming up on The Rico, we'll have a more in-depth look at Pete Alonso. The good and bad from his tenure as a New York Met. We'll go deeper into analyzing the contract that he will get. And as I pointed out today a little bit, what I would be willing to give him. We'll also delve into outside free agents. How far are you willing to go for stars like Juan Soto and Corbin Burns? You can email us anytime, thericob@gmail.com, thericob@gmail.com. Try to get through the World Series. It's almost over, I promise. One way or another, it'll be over. And we can begin the silly season of New York Mets offseason. Thank you very much for downloading, subscribing, and listening to another edition of Rico Bronya.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rico Bronya podcast. It's amazing, isn't it? Make sure you download it now to keep it on you at all times.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.